Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Is 6.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. Dave. Dollar Store
Wayne Dave.
You're waiting for the name of the day.
Yeah, what is the name of the day?
Well,
the name du jour.
Yeah, Dollar Store seems to be more famous, you know. I'm getting a lot of emails about that too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. People are wondering, what is it with you and the dollar store and why? And people, you know what? The biggest comment is,
yes,
why are you collecting media? Like, it's outdated. It's so old school.
Outdated?
Well, this is most of the comments either call you, okay, look, it's outdated. You're old.
Oh, that's true.
I've also got a couple, okay, boomer.
I'm Gen X.
Okay. I just thought it was funny. I think that's becoming just a term saying, hey, man, you're old.
Yeah.
I don't quite get it. I mean, Dollar Store is a place where you get a lot of, you get Blu-rays.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
that's right.
I sort of know what they're saying because I'm kind of like you too. It's nice to have the medium because you can't always find it.
That's right. And you own it.
Yeah,
you watch it when you want to watch it.
That's
right.
You're
not tied to a streaming service.
Right. You know, but you've got membership at the dollar store.
That's right.
You know, I don't know. I don't see the big deal, but I just love it that they're jumping on you.
That's good.
Why are you buying the product? You don't need to buy it. Didn't anybody tell him?
A lot of times it comes with the digital media as well.
Ooh.
Yeah. And for $1.25. How can you go wrong?
Yeah, what else do you have to live for? It's cheaper than a tank of gas. Cheaper than a Starbucks. Oh,
what can you get for $1.25 today?
I don't know. Can you get a black coffee now?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe at some stores. Lost losers.
So I saw that. I finally saw that John Wick 4. So you're right. And you know, I actually didn't fast forward too much. So actually, I liked it for the most part.
It's a fun action film.
Yeah, fun action.
Did a good job with it.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I was okay with it. It was okay. But is he really dead?
Probably not.
No, of course not.
Probably not. We'll have to see if there's a John Wick 5. Yeah.
So now, did you run up to the store this morning? I guess Stevie Nicks released her Barbie doll.
She released a Barbie doll?
Yeah, I thought for sure you'd be at the...
No, I did not know this.
Door crasher, getting your first Barbie Stevie Nicks doll.
Wow. She was just in the area, too, with Billy Joel.
Well, there you go. You see, yeah. you missed out.
I'm going to run right out.
Yeah, I don't know what you're doing. What are you waiting for? And that new dome opened up, hey, that...
Yeah, you were showing me that. Yeah, yeah.
In Vegas, and the U2 played. That looked pretty cool, hey? It's like a big eye inside. You see the concert, see how it all kind of looked. It looked pretty cool.
Would you do that, Al?
No. No.
That's what I thought.
No. It's a little too much for me. I'm getting too old. You know,
you like a more intimate venue.
Yeah. But think about that. That you could have watched your Oppenheimer in that.
Yeah. Oh, that'd have been awesome.
Yeah. I would have threw up a few times.
Right. You feel like you're falling the whole time.
And they caught the killer of Tupac.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
It only took 27 years.
Only 27. Right. Better late than never.
Well, yeah, of course. That's what I said, you know. And we've got the guy that caught the killer. No, we
don't. He's getting nervous.
Yeah, what are they going to do with all those? I was noticing all these people because there's all these places on TikTok and there's all these people that have film of Tupac. He's still alive, right? So what are they going to do?
I don't know.
How can you convict the killer if he's still alive?
Live, exactly. Like Jim Morrison and Elvis.
We need a cop. Well, we have got a cop. No,
yes.
Kind of. Anyway, he's got lots of policing experience. He's writing now. He's doing a podcast. He's the guy to go to. Newest book, Blood Red Ivory, or that was his latest book. And we've got Mr. John Stamp here. So, hey, John, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me. This is great.
Well, we haven't had you yet. That's coming up. No, so listen, I always wonder what leads a person into a career in policing, period, whether it be, military police or if it's regular, police or NCIS or any sort of service toward policing a community or a country. Were you born into that?
It's not like a family thing. I was the first to go into law enforcement in my family. It was really, I don't know how it happened, but by like 9, 10 years old, I was like, that's what I'm going to do. And I always wanted to. And whether it's growing up with too many TV shows and movies, or I do just kind of distinctly remember, that you're trying to figure out what to do with your life and going into careers and stuff like that. And growing up in upstate New York, I distinctly remember, very cold, snowy night, 5 inches of snow on the ground, and this lone police car just rolling through the night. Nobody else is around. It's desolate out there. It's too cold to even breathe outside. And I just remember thinking as a little kid, being like, whatever that guy's doing, he's probably getting into something cool. Just being the only person out there on the streets. Just if anything goes down, he's going to be a part of it. And I was like, that could probably be a pretty cool deal. And I just followed it ever since. And it was right. It's a very interesting gig. It's not always a fun gig, but it's a good way to spend 20 years.
Oh yeah. Well, it sounds like you have a love for it and you went for it. And I think when you have a love for something, it's not like work. And that's why you say it's a fun gig, or it's, you're trying to describe it and you're saying it's that, but it's because you love it. It doesn't feel like work all the time.
Yeah. And for me, it was really just having something where I wasn't doing the same thing every day. As you get up there, get into that, having to work for a living thing, I don't want to be, doing the same thing over and over and over again, like a grind. I wanted to get out and be able to do different things. And, the law enforcement is one of those things. You never know what's coming over the radio or coming from your boss to go do. So it just keeps it interesting, keeps it going. I've likened it to like having career ADHD. It's as long as there's something new to stimulate me, I'm pretty much on board.
what were the TV detectives or cops that you liked? Like, was it like Hawaii 5-0, or was it Kojak, or was it was there a certain policing chips where you like?
I did that. That's narrowing that generation down for me. I guess I'm an Xer. I've never really looked at it too much, but yeah, I grew up in the 90s, the late 80s and 90s is when I was starting to pay attention to stuff. So crazy as it sounds, it was like Miami Vice and like 21 Jump Street and, and stuff like that. Like Third Watch, I remember. Those, and then, of course, John McClane, probably best cop ever lived, you know, through Die Hard. It's like, oh, wait, if you're a police officer, you get to do that? And Die Hard, I'm in.
Yeah, oh totally.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
It was a documentary, basically. What was that William Shatner show with T.J. Hooker?
T.J. Hooker.
Yeah, that was who was his partner?
But Heather Locklear was in there.
That's Heather what Locklear. I was thinking of. Heather Locklear, yeah.
Yeah, she was kind of like the extra wheel.
They did a great SNL skit on that.
Oh.
With Shatner, where he was riding on a car.
That's funny.
The whole time.
That would make me watch. SNL.
Yeah. There's some funny ones on there. I mean, I haven't watched it in a while, but
back when they were funny.
Yeah, I left SNL when Sandler did. So I think. I'm dated.
Yeah. You're dated. You're so old.
Yeah, that's right.
Jeez. I left when Chevy Chase left. Jesus.
Oh man, that was the crew. Like those are the ones I'll watch the reruns of those. Like if you can find them on like TV Land or something. But that original crew, you'll never be able to beat that.
No, that was what I grew up with. But you see, I'm an old man. So listen. What goes on with you then? Why are you getting into the writing world? Like, what made you jump into that? That's a transformation. And when you write, you kind of have to share a lot of yourself when you write. So I would imagine that, wouldn't that feel a little intimidating?
You know what? It's funny you mention that, but a little bit because going through, you know, working with the, you know, in law enforcement and FBI and NCIS, they bang OPSEC into you so much and, you know, having a clearance and stuff like that throughout the career. So it's one of those things where whenever you're writing or whenever you're doing an interview, you get done and at least for the next like 2 hours, you're just like, man, I hope I didn't say anything stupid. Right? You're like, man, I hope I didn't talk about something too much. Right. So it's taken a while to get past that. That bit of trauma, but no, I've had a notebook by my side or in my hand since I was in sixth grade. I think the writing thing came around the same time I decided that I'd want to be a police officer, and I actually almost failed sixth grade math class because I decided to write a 55 page story instead of paying attention in math class, and it was awful. It was absolutely awful. 55 pages handwritten in a notebook. but I was like, growing up, I started out with like Peter Benchley's Jaws, and then I got into Crichton and Clancy, and I'm just like, man, this is the stuff, right? The old time really cool, back cover author photos like Clancy, you know, in a flight suit standing on the deck of an aircraft carrier. It's like, man, that's what writers get to do. I was like, I should probably do that too. but then you quickly realize like, okay, you can't go from graduating high school to writing best-selling novels because you don't know anything. So it was one of those things that, the ideas were there and I couldn't figure out how to put a novel together until I was like 36.
Yeah, it's definitely a process.
With
your background, are you required to submit everything that you write to the government for review, or how does that work?
On the fiction side, for the first couple, I went through the process, you know, like I was with DHS when I started getting published, and I went through and asked them, like I offered, and they were like, yeah, it's fiction. No, you're good. And I was like, all right, cool. So it was one of those things where I gave the synopsis and gave a summary of the first couple books. And if you look at it, I mean, there's nothing in the law enforcement world that you can't Google or spend an evening watching ID Discovery that you can't figure out. It's not like we don't have any secrets, you know, that haven't been exploited in a grand way in the true crime world. So it's a little different for guys like Steve Stratton or Jack Carr that have to go through that process because they were in that more controlled world for certain amounts of their career, you know?
Right.
And I just stick to cop work in my books, with a little bit of fantasy thrown in there just to see if I could pull it off. So they're, you know, it's not like I'm writing a spy thriller or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. You're not giving away the secrets.
No, I have no interest in doing that. That would cause a lot of problems.
Well, yeah. You end up on TV and, you know, in court and all that stuff.
Yeah. It's not good for the retirement.
No.
So.
No. You're going to have to change your name, color your hair, or do everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, try to make a run for it, you know.
Yeah. Go to Canada.
Someplace. I guess that worked for some people, but you got to think of the place. If you're going to flee something, you need to be crooked enough to have Batman money. Like in the writing gig, won't provide Batman money. So unless I was able to disappear to some place and live like Bruce Wayne, I don't think the price. They say everybody's got a price, but I don't think there's a price high enough to be able to disappear and live that way. And I have very, very special needs.
So. Yeah, of course you do. beer is expensive in Canada, so you want to make
Yeah, bourbon. Yeah. I mean, they do make decent bourbon and whiskey in Canada, I guess, but it's not Kentucky.
No,
so.
No, nothing's Kentucky in Canada.
I gotta live the good life. I'm a lamb.
Well, you know, I have to wonder, but so what got you onto this? I mean, you kind of got into writing, but what got you onto this kind of writing, like your books? You kind of, you know, how do I describe this? Because this newest book, Blood Red Ivory, now it's an NCIS agent transferred to East Africa, where he must investigate the murder of a sailor. So it's kind of a military thriller. What was the reason for that?
Well, I came up with the main character, Ty Benhoff, and kind of, you know, I read a ton in this job. You know, you read, you write, and when I read, you know, it seems like we've got you know, if you liken it to Police Academy in the thriller world, we've got a whole lot of Tackleberries, but not a whole lot of Mahoneys. And I kind of just wanted to go the other way. I wanted, you know, make a guy, you know, based, not based on him, but, like the way, Bruce Willis portrays John McClane. He's not exactly a ninja. You know, he's a complete wise ass. He's somebody that no supervisor would want on his squad in the real world, you know? But he just, you know, they pile on garbage on top of him and he somehow makes it through. So, that's where I think kind of, a little more Mahoney than Tackleberry, and I wanted Ty to kind of be that, and he's an amalgam of, you know, all the coolest people I've worked with over the last 20 years. You know, my favorite guys to go out on an investigation with were, you know, just sarcastic, dark humored, just complete wise asses. But when the time came to you know, get to work on the scene or go start doing interviews and interrogations, they're right on point, focused, and getting the case done. So, that he came out of all of them, all the coolest people I've worked with over the last 20 years. And, so I created the character first, and, I was trying to figure out, you know, a kind of a cool, kind of exotic way to throw him in the mix. And, I stumbled across an article about the Akashinga, a group of, women, anti-poaching officers or rangers, part of the International Anti-Poaching Foundation, I think, out of Zimbabwe. And these women are all victims of abuse of some sort, you know, domestic abuse, sexual abuse, somewhat. And the guy who created the unit is a former, Australian SAS who, moved out to Zimbabwe, wanted to get into the anti-poaching, you know, fight, and created this group of all women that go out and protect rhinos, protect elephants on certain ranges throughout Zimbabwe. And I read that article, and there was a documentary on it too. And I'm like, man, those, you know, I was so impressed by what I'm reading. And I love Africa. I spent 4 months in Djibouti, Africa, in the Horn of Africa. And, so I was like, yeah, I was like, that's just a, you know, a fantastic story. If I could do some sort of, something to put those women in a book. I just wanted to write a story like that. I just was so inspired by it. So I took Ty and I put him in the, you know, as an NCIS agent, they're all civilian, and they're all throughout the world. That's kind of why I picked, the NCIS as his, agency, so that I could go any place in the world and be able to justify having an investigation or having him go through a story there. So I put, he's kind of on the outs with his agency. He got on the wrong side of a certain assistant director, and the assistant director, doing what he does, he threw him off to one of the most desolate field offices that he could think of. And so here's Ty sitting in Africa doing force protection surveys throughout other parts of Africa, and just with a supervisor with the express orders to drive him out of the agency. So when a sailor is murdered in Zimbabwe, he's the guy that gets the call, and he gets sent out there all by himself, no backup, no support, and he doesn't know it at the time, but he ends up being caught in the crossfire between these Akashinga rangers and a ivory smuggling operation. So It's all, he just gets thrown in the mix and he's got to figure it out all by himself because nobody else is, you know, his nearest backup is like a 4-hour helicopter ride. So there's nobody coming for him. So that's, I just wanted to throw him in the mix, but try to keep it light, keep a little bit of humor involved in it. And that's how Blood Red Ivory came about. Really, I had the character first and then came up with the setting and the plot behind it.
Story of my life.
You know, when you're doing something like that, but, you've got to have some of yourself in that character, I'd imagine. And it's different for everyone. So how much of yourself is in there and what is it that you share with that character that is the same as you?
I think I try to, you know, I never really focus on me, you know, being Ty Benhoff, but yeah, in order to see it, I mean, there are certain things that come out of me of things that I've seen in the law enforcement world that I want to, you know, give people a chance to, just show, some of those things that you don't always see in true crime or in crime thrillers, just keeping it as authentic as possible to the job of law enforcement, not glorifying, you know, just the car chases and the action, but you know, an investigator's priority in protecting the victim or telling the victim's story in this case. And you know, it's one thing I learned, you know, overseas working death cases, you know, which we did do. When you're over there, even if it's a natural death that occurs, and they occur in expeditionary environments or a suicide, what you know that you don't always note up in, you know, back in the States, you know, somebody has a work accident or somebody commits suicide. It's, you know, you work it like a homicide until it's figured out that no, it's, you know, it either ended up being a suicide or ended up being a work accident, and the case goes away relatively quickly. And when you're overseas, the thing that is different is that, you know, overseas in an expeditionary environment, these families back home, they send these people out there, whether they're contractors, whether they're active duty military, reservists, they send them out there to the other side of the planet. And, when they get a notification that the worst has happened to them, you know, they go through the same process of grieving. But the information is nowhere near what it is if it happens domestically. Right. So when you're over there, it's kind of, you always want to keep that perspective of the victim and not only the victim, but the victim's family who want to know what happened to their loved one back home. But in the big machine of, you know, the military expeditionary process or you know, whatever organization, there might not be that much information. So the more information you can get, it doesn't have to be a homicide. It can be a natural death or a suicide, but the more information you can get that can be shared with the family will help them in that grieving process and help them with that closure. And I think that was one of Ty's main motivating factors in the case that he was sent out on, is, you know, this kid in this instance is murdered, way out in the middle of nowhere in Zimbabwe. And for no other reason than at least being able to tell his mom what happened to her son is you know, just keeps him going as pressure mounts up, as the violence mounts up, as all these things get piled on top of him. The thing that's going to keep him going is being able to tell his mom what happened to him, you know, just get her that kind of closure, if you can even say there's closure in a situation like that. But that's one of those things that I don't know if it always comes across in the thriller genre or, you know, fiction whatsoever, but it is a concern that's shared by every agent that might be out there doing those types of investigations and, you know, expeditionary environments. So I guess that'd kind of be one of them. And then the other one, just looking at a case and looking at the, you know, the objective nature of running an investigation, stuff like that. My favorite parts of crime scenes, my favorite parts of surveillances, stuff like that. That's the stuff I enjoyed. I'm going to write stuff I enjoyed, you know, as an investigator. And for me, it was, you know, interview and interrogation and crime scenes. I fell in love with those aspects of law enforcement, the further I went. So he gets to go out and do a crime scene all by himself out in Lion Country. He's told by everybody he runs into in Zimbabwe that he's going to end up eaten, you know, has a standoff with a bull elephant, stuff like that. The stuff that, you know, would kind of be hilarious, if it weren't for the fact that he's all by himself in the middle of the jungle, right?
Well, you know, you also mentioned action. How do you construct your action and your fight scenes? Do you draw from your background and your training, or do you just use a lot of imagination for those things?
I luckily was never had to be a gunslinger. I never actually had to be in a shooting. Never was in a shooting, which is a good thing. You know, nobody in law enforcement goes into it hoping to be a gunfighter. You know, unfortunately there are those statistics. But for me, the one thing that I always based my action off of is that in law enforcement you're the last one to know that you're about to be punched. Yeah, we don't get to go into a situation going in there, just going in hot and just laying waste to, and then, you know, beating everybody down and then figuring out what happened, right? So, law enforcement there's always the reactionary gap. So in any given circumstance, you go into a situation, you can gauge people's, behavior, you can gauge people's movements, pre-assault indicators, stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you don't get to be the one who chooses when the fight starts. And I like to keep that when I'm choreographing my action or when I'm creating tension in a scene, is that we're the last ones to know we're about to be in a fight, because everybody else around us, we go into places and everybody, we're the last ones into the situation. We got to catch up on what happened in a situation, and everybody else who's there is already on the same page,
right?
Unless they're actively trying to beat each other down, it suddenly becomes very unifying experience for people when law enforcement shows up and they decide very quickly, are we going to comply or are we not? And we only have the information we're given. So when it comes to writing action, like for Ty, it's, he's out in the middle of nowhere. He doesn't even know all the players that are involved. And I write it that way specifically. If my character doesn't have the information, my reader's not getting information either. So when I write it, when Ty's the last one to know, he doesn't know until the shots start, and he doesn't even know why there's shots firing, right? So when he's under attack, he's got that reactionary gap that all law enforcement have to deal with, and it's about a half second, depending on circumstances. So I like to keep that's the last. I like to keep that reaction versus action versus reaction flowing through when I write my action scenes. And then I write based on, I have done a little bit. I'm not exactly an expert in fighting, and neither is Ty. So it's basically, you've got the training that you've been given over your career. I've done some extra stuff on the side just to keep myself in shape, and jujitsu and some other martial arts over time, but I'm nowhere near an expert in anything. So I'll use those, but I also use them in a way that me being not much more than a novice would use them, basically just sloppy, Ty's just in a fight. He's got to figure out his way out of the fight. So I'll use stuff that I've done over time, but I don't want him to be a ninja. That's not why I wrote him. He's a regular cop, and regular cops aren't ninjas. They're just very tenacious when somebody comes at them, because that's it. What are they going to do? So you got to be able, sometimes you got back up, sometimes you don't, but you have no choice in the matter. You have to figure out a way to succeed.
Yeah. Dave's a ninja.
I'm not a ninja.
Well, no, you can see Dave. He's got his YouTube channel and he does all the sticks and
ninja
stuff. I've been involved in martial arts for a long time.
Yeah, he gets on there, throws sticks at people, and runs. And
yeah. When I was, I realized that my biggest strength in jiu-jitsu was getting choked. Not exactly applying chokes, but I'm really good at getting.
That's
choked.
All part of the
and
fun.
That's right. Yep. It's like, why do you keep going back to that? Well, apparently I've got a skill at getting, people like to punch me and they like to choke me. So that's...
Personally, my biggest thing is to watch it on TV. That's my skill.
Yeah. It's, I like that better.
So now this is always a weird question, but what's your relationship with Ty and any of your other characters? And when you finish a book, do they disappear, or do you stay with them? Do they stay with you? What's your relationship like?
It's fun. That's a great way of putting it, is a relationship, right? Cause I'm pretty sure that we'd all say the same thing, that if our characters actually knew who we were, they'd kill us, because we're the ones that throwing them into the meat grinder all the time. But no, Ty is, I'm always coming up with ideas, you know, mapping out what I want Ty to do next. What kind of arc is he going to follow? Is he going to be, you know, is he going to be a static, you know, action thriller, character over time? Or is he going to have that progression in life that, that all of us do? And so there's that conversation, you know, that goes on. I guess it's not much of a conversation. It's me writing notes, but, you know, I do try to figure out what's his arc going to be. Cause I don't know if it would feel, fair to him to do, you know, do 20 books of, you know, new action sequence of the week, you know, with him without letting him progress as a, you know, as just a human being, you know, it's all fun and games until then then life, you know, having a great time in your 20s, single, you know, just working cases, traveling, going all different places. And then you settle down and then the priority shifts very quickly to family and kids. And how do you balance that? And, you know, what do those dynamics look like for a character in a crime thriller series? So I'm kind of leaning on that way and just kind of playing with those dynamics, but it's all up in the air. It's all what makes sense when the plot comes. There are other characters I've had in the past though that like, you know, you get down to it and it's like, oh, I really like this character, but I'm sorry, but you have to die. Right. And I've gotten a lot of hate mail on some of those decisions I've made. Some of my earlier books, Brother's Keeper and Spoilers, I had a great female detective that I probably could have written for a long time, and she just ran into the wrong part of the plot. And as I'm writing, I'm like, man, there's only one thing to do. And like, this is a career cut short. So take her out. The book comes out and immediately people are like, why did you kill her? I'm like, oh, well, cause I had to keep story going. So, sadly.
Did you find it hard to kill her off? Was it like an emotional investment in this character?
It was. Yeah. She was just so cool. I mean, it's in spoilers. I had, she was never meant to be a main character. It was written as, you know, following a narcotics unit who stumbles onto, you know, an international arms trafficking ring running through their city and kind of a hunters become the hunted type thing. And right from the third page, she just pops out on the page as just being a badass, but actually the brains and the maturity of the outfit. And then another, the antagonist, was a, female assassin, who was like Joker level crazy when she came out on the page. And I was like, man, she is awesome. She was so awesome. I had to write another book because I had to bring her back. So the females completely took over that storyline. And when it came down to it, it was like, you know, you're setting up your chessboard for that final climax. And, there's Poppy sitting right there. And it's like, the only way to make this cool is if you go. So it was unfortunate. It was an unfortunate writing experience, but it made for a really good ending. So there is that.
How long have you been having an affair with her?
My wife knows fully. She knows all about it. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, she understands. She understands how I feel about Poppy and Bianca.
Oh, there's two of them. He's your boys.
Oh, the crazy assassin's name was Bianca, and that kind of Joker level crazy is probably fun at the bar, but it's not something you want to take on the family. Oh, so
he's a player,
but no, I'm not. I don't have. I couldn't. I don't understand people who are because I don't have that kind of energy.
Well, yeah, you know, it gets harder as you get older. You know, it's
yeah, and it would get expensive. It would get really expensive. I don't have the time
no.
either.
No, too messy. Way too messy.
So, listen, so what do you want people to get out of your books? Do you have a purpose, some sort of a meaning when you write a book, or is it just completely entertainment and you're just letting her loose?
It's pretty much I want people to be able to sit down, get lost, just have a great time, and when they hit that last page, they realize that they need a minute. Like, they just... out of breath. I want them to have so much fun reading, get absorbed in the story, and just be like, whew, you know, that was a good one. I do, themes that run through all my books are kind of, you know, resilience and just kind of, just the dedication to getting the job done, regardless of the trouble piled on top of them. Brotherhood and one of them, Brother's Keeper, was big on Unity, and then Tenacity and Spoilers is pretty much just different themes that I think are all related to law enforcement or pretty much any vocation probably.
Do you think about the violence on the page as you write it?
I'll come up with my original ideas, come up with my characters, I'll plot out, you know, I'll start out, plot out a hook, plot out an ending, the ending climax, and then kind of roadmap my way of how I get there. And then I'll take that outline that I spent so much time on, I'll close the page, and I'll start writing. And really it ends up being I'm writing the movie in my head, and every day when my writing session is done, I hit pause, and then I come back and boom. Of course the fight scenes and the car chases are the coolest parts, right? So they're the most fun to write. But as far as mapping out the violence, it's I want it to be just authentic. I don't want it to feel like it's a choreographed dance. I just want it to be, you know, just angry and get it over with as soon as possible, just, you know, like a regular fight would be, really.
Well, talking about outlining, you said you figured out how to write a novel like by the time you were 36. Did you have a process for that? Did you take classes? Did you dissect someone else's novel? What was your process?
I tried taking some classes in college and didn't really stick. Like, I had plenty of ideas, but I couldn't figure out how to actually just get down to it and write the book. So when I went to grad school at, Go Gators, University of Florida. I went to grad school for forensic science. And so I spent 2 years, and my process would be I would come into work about an hour and a half early when nobody's around. I would do my research, do my writing, get all my assignments done. And then when the bell sounded to start the work day, I'd just go to work, right? So I get done with my grad degree, and I'm still in that mode of waking up early every day and coming in to get work done. So I'm sitting there, what do I do with this? And so I just broke out an old outline and refreshed it and came up with an idea I wanted to try, outlined it out, hook, climax. And I came in with, I just kept that time frame during every day with a goal of 500 words a day. And, you know, 6-8 months later, I'm looking at a draft. I was like, holy crap. I was like, that actually worked. So I think my problem always was that I never, you know, the idea of being an author is awesome. But at some point you have to write. So, and I never, I get, I think it, I think it was simply, I lacked the maturity, to look at it as another vocation and set out office hours, so to speak, right? So when I, you know, the grad school forced me into that process. And, I think that's where the maturity came from, to just dedicate that specific time as a second job to, getting that writing done. And that's how I was able to lay it out and get it done. But to your point, yeah, like studying other authors, trying to figure out how people go about plotting. That's I always did that over the years, and it was like, it never just clicked. It didn't click until I got done with that grad degree.
Yeah. Whatever you do, don't read any of my books.
Are you one of those, just no outline guys? You just go?
Who, me? No, yeah.
Yeah. Is that, how do you do?
Yeah. But you see, a lot of my stories, 30 of the books are nonfiction true crime, and they're taken after a true story. So they're kind of outlined for me. It's about getting the information. So when I do fiction like I'm doing now, no, it's more about the character and what you're going to put them through. But the characters are more important, right?
For me, yeah. For me, I think I like having a character that people can relate to. And I wrote Ty that way. Like, his name's Tyrone Benhoff. It's not like he's, Mitch Moneymaker or, Cliff Diver or something like that, some action hero name. It's he's just a normal guy. Comes from... Yeah, he's not John Wick. He is definitely not John Wick, but he's just a normal, everyday guy just put in extraordinary circumstances, and I like keeping it that way. I just think he's approachable. You know, he's not like somebody that you think is going to, come and save the day every time.
Do you think people get it wrong when they're trying to write cops, or even on shows nowadays and movies and stuff? Do we have not a great realistic image of what cops are?
I think there's some that do it well and some that don't. But, you know, you I hardly even watch network TV anymore. It's just so hard because it's written in such a vanilla way that, you know, and politics has to be seeped in, and any given, whatever the cause of the week is, has to be seeped into their plot lines. And it's like, oh, and it's, so there's very few that I watch. I do, because, I'm a giant Nathan Fillion fan. I have watched The Rookie in the past, and I spend about half of it shaking my head and the other half thinking, if they just listened to their technical advisor more, this would be a really cool show. Right? So there's moments where they that somehow that show manages to capture cop culture in 1 minute and then completely destroy it in the next. But in those moments, it's really well written. But, you know, like every show, if you've got an hour show, what have you got actually after commercials, like 30 minutes to tell a story? And every cop gets in a gunfight every week, and they're not put on 30 days leave. So it's like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I don't think you can write that police life right without just glamorizing. And you have to do it with everything, but no, I'm a big fan of, On Patrol Live. I just love, I love watching them work and just watching, the way these officers know how to talk to people and handle people and communicate with people. I think that's what people miss a lot about the law enforcement world is they're some of the best communicators possible. They can talk to any person to A, gain information, calm a situation down, just figure out the situation, and any police officer who's on patrol, just getting reps over time within a year or two, those people are expert communicators and can walk into any given situation and be able to talk to any human on the planet. They just have that. I think that's the strongest strength of law enforcement. And it, you know, of course you can't glamorize that very well.
No,
so that doesn't make it into the TV shows.
It's going to be boring, you know, if it's too much.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I mean, so you're telling me Queen Latifah can't really walk into a room and knock 10 men out and not break
an egg? I couldn't be a part of that show. I didn't even watch the pilot. I was like, oh.
Yeah. No. I know it's crazy how they have someone that's, you know, and they're wearing heels and they're not in the best shape. And then they go in and all of a sudden they walk out of the room and all 10 men are knocked over dead, you know? It's
like, yeah. It's funny. At my house, my wife's a nurse, and with me being in law enforcement, it's very hard for us to settle on a show. she puts on Grey's Anatomy. I don't even know if that show's still on, but you know, if Grey's Anatomy's on, she's yelling at the TV within 5 minutes because somebody's not wearing gloves or breaking the sterile field in surgery or something other. I'm like, wow, that's stressful. But then if she puts on a cop show and they got a crime scene and David Caruso's walking through making cool one-liners, but he's not wearing gloves and he's putting his glasses in his mouth and touching evidence, I start losing it. I'm like, okay, let's just put on some stand-up comedy and like call it a day.
When in doubt, turn on John Wick. He shoots everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. See, John Wick, I can just shut it all off and, you know, watch Keanu do his thing. And I'm like, yeah, man.
Yeah.
I love it.
Kind of reminds you what it would be like if you went to the mall. Anyway,
that's terrible.
I'm terrible.
No, I don't think you'll ever beat, Arnold Schwarzenegger at the mall in Commando.
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is the one to tell us that's how it goes down at the mall.
Yeah. Yeah, going shopping. Yeah.
Yeah, going shopping.
Yeah. Mall cop. How's that? Well, listen, we're glad you came on. Now, of course, Blood Red Ivory. And now what's your social media and website and all that for listeners so they can find you? You hang out at a bar. Do you go to where do people find?
Oh, I don't have time for bars anymore. I got two little kids, so that's I stopped taking them to bars when they're free.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, trying to be a parent. I'm on IG and I guess X now at John Stamp Writer, and the website's johnstampwriter.com. The podcast That's Criminal with John Stamp is on Apple, Spotify, pretty much anywhere you find the podcast, and it's up on my website. So that's the easiest way to find me. I'm not hard to find.
Well, we'll have all that up on our website. People can find you and stuff. We'll have your Tinder information too.
Oh yeah, yeah. That just Yeah, actually, the wife doesn't
only
know about
fans.
That one, so we're gonna have to. Yeah, my OnlyFans is a really good stream of revenue. You know, and all I got to do is like show my feet. And I'm
yeah,
good,
well,
so,
there you know, go.
It's working out. You just got to find a niche. You just got to find a niche on that site, and you're all good. I can even keep my clothes on most of the
most
time.
Most of the time, you see. We're not going to ask that.
That just went sideways.
Yeah, you're in trouble. Well, again, thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was great talking to you guys.
Thanks, John.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.